This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. قال أفرأيتم ما كنتم تعبدون أنتم وآباؤكم الأقدمون فإنهم عدو لي إلا رب العالمين الذي خلقني فهو يهدين والذي هو يطعمني ويسقين وإذا مرضت فهو يشفين والذي يميتني ثم يحيين والذي أطمع أن يغفر لي خطيئتي يوم الدين رب هب لي حكما وألحقني بالصالحين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى اله وصحبه اجمعين اما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. I'm going to continue speaking to you today about the passage of Surah Ash-Shu'ara where Ibrahim عليه السلام is now going to utter his most famous prayer after he's done responding to his people, his father and his people. قال أفرأيتم ما كنتم تعبدون. Have you seen what you've been worshipping? The word seeing in English, also in Arabic, and also in other languages, is not just used for physically seeing. It's also used for understanding, thinking about something, contemplating something, which is why even nowadays in common language, if somebody explains something to you, say, ah, I see. But you don't actually see, it means you understand, but you say that I see. Or you can say something like, I see what you're saying. Even though you're not seeing what they're saying, you're hearing and understanding what they're saying, but you're using the word see. In not so different ways, the Arabic language uses the word ra'a, and Quran uses the word ra'a in the same way. So, أَفَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي يُكَذِّبُ بِالدِّينِ, for example, or أَلَمْ تَرَ كَيْفَ فَعَلَ رَبُّكَ بِأَصْحَابِ الْفِيلِ, didn't you see what Allah did with the people of the elephant? No, we didn't see it, but have you thought about it, right? So, ru'ya is used in the meaning of seeing. It's used literally also, but it can also be used in the meaning of contemplating, thinking, analyzing, right? So here's what Ibrahim alayhi salam is asking them to do. Have you thought about the stuff that you've been worshipping? You and you and your most ancient ancestors. So he's actually alluding to the fact that the religion that his people follow in this ancient city of Ur is an ancient religion, even for him. It's not something recently invented. It's been going on for a very, very, very long time. And the older the religion becomes, the more prestigious it becomes, the more set and ingrained it becomes, right? And so, أَنْتُمْ وَأَبَاؤُكُمُ الْأَقْدَمُونَ is his way of saying, yes, you keep highlighting the fact that the earliest, the most ancient people used to do this, and that's why we're following it. Well, here's my take on all of it. فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي. Then all of them are an enemy to me. And all of them are an enemy to me. It's interesting, that language also. He could have said, فَإِنِّي عَدُوٌ لَهُمْ, and I am an enemy to them. That's not what he says. He says, they are an enemy to me. Similarly, Allah could say, you are an enemy of shaytan. That's not what he says. He says, shaytan is an enemy to you. So, إِنَّ شَيْطَانَ لَكُمْ عَدُوٌ مُبِينٌ. That's an important distinction. Because that suggests that the start of the animosity comes from one side. When we say, Allah tells us, shaytan is our enemy, that means that the animosity begins with shaytan. He starts the first offense. If I say, I am your enemy, then I'm the one declaring war. I'm the one declaring animosity. You understand? I'm only reciprocating. Now I have to treat you like an enemy because you've declared your animosity towards me. So the same way here, فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي, that all of them, meaning your ancestors, the culture, and these gods that you follow, are in fact an enemy to me. They are an enemy to me. How can they be an enemy to you? Well, in this world and in the next. I want you to think about it in both ways. It's easy to think about it in terms of the next life. So of course, if you follow and worship the wrong god, you follow the wrong trick, the evil traditions, you know, many pagan traditions, I mentioned this to you before, many pagan traditions, part of their culture was to sacrifice children, sacrifice virgins, sacrifice, you know, a soul to please one of the gods. This was a common practice. This is not unheard of, because they believed that these gods are really hard to please. So there were evil practices that they used to do. And obviously, if you endorse a religion like that, then you'll be answerable to Allah on Judgment Day, and you're following something that's false and spiritually damaging. So yes, they are an enemy to you in the sense that you may think that you're following a religion and you're loyal to it and all of it, but Judgment Day comes and you realize that they were the ones destroying you more than anything else and more than anyone else. So the Quran consistently paints a picture between the contrast of this life and the next life. Somebody who you thought was your friend in this life, and in the next life, you're like, oh, why did I have this guy as a friend? Well, how, if only I didn't take this person as my friend. Ya laytani lam attakhidh fulanan khalila. If only I hadn't taken this person as a friend of mine. And then there are people who had terrible friends, terrible associates, and they walked away from them because of Allah. And then on Judgment Day, they're in the safe zone, and their friends are down in hellfire, and they look, they actually see their friend in hellfire, and they say, you know, inkitta la turtin, you almost pushed me off the cliff too. Man, if I was with you, I would have ended up in the same place. So the idea that's being reinforced in the Quran over and over, this understanding, is that your and my feelings towards someone in this life will not translate the same way in the next life. The only way that will translate over, like, I love my family in this life. The only way that family will not become an enemy of mine in the next life is that if we were doing the best for each other for this life while preparing for the next. This is why Allah even said in Surah At-Taghabun, "Inna min azwajikum wa awladikum aduwwan lakum," that there's no doubt about it. Out of your spouses and your children, there are enemies for you. How can your spouses and children be enemies for you? You know, this is not talking about domestic violence or people trying to kill each other inside the family. What it's talking about is when your family becomes the reason for which you abandon the religion, you abandon Allah's deen, you abandon what's right, you commit to what's wrong out of love for your family. So yes, on the outside, they love you, they love the fact that you're doing that, and they appreciate it, you know, but Judgment Day comes and that's not the scenario, you know. ثُمَّ ذَهَبَ إِلَىٰ أَهْلِهِ يَتَمَطَّعَ أَوْلَىٰ لَكَ فَأَوْلَىٰ. Right? The person goes back to his family happy after rebelling against Allah, offending the Messenger, and Allah says destruction will fall upon you on top of other destruction. Then the same Judgment Day comes and a person is running away from their spouse, their children, their mother, because they were on opposite ends of this, right? They don't want to be associated. Why do you think on Judgment Day Allah describes that somebody's going to run away from their mom? Because then, because of the mom sinned because of the child sinned because of the mom. They supported each other in doing something wrong. Now they want nothing to do with each other. You know? If tabarra alladhina tubi'u min alladhina tabi'u wa ra'aw al'adab wa taqatta'at bihim al-asbab. Surah Al-Baqarah. Very heavy ayah. When the people who used to be followed are going to declare that they have nothing to do with their followers and their relationships will be cut. You know? When they all look at the followers and the followed, will all look at the punishment. Sometimes the wife follows the husband into wrongdoing. Sometimes the husband follows the wife into wrongdoing. Sometimes children follow parents into wrongdoing. Sometimes parents follow children into wrongdoing. Somebody's following somebody, and on that day, all of those relationships are cut. So this tradition that's making people follow the religion, or the elders that are making people follow the religion, or the society that's making you follow something, there you might feel like you're fitting in now because you're going along with them. They're all an enemy to you when Judgment Day comes. So فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوُ لِي is his way of saying, even if I don't see the animosity right now, the reality is that is an animosity. You are wanting my destruction. You know, there's two kinds of enemies. You know, even nowadays, the more dangerous warfare is actually not on the battlefield. It's cyber warfare. It's cold warfare. It's intelligence warfare, right? Intelligence gathering of your enemy. Stealing secrets of your enemy, stealing technology of your enemy. And what kind of destruction is that? Oh, we have a 50-year plan to destroy this nation, right? We're not going to kill them overnight. It's a long-term plan. And you know what? That's a lot like what Allah is describing with Iblis and the people. If you have the wrong kinds of affiliations, it looks like friends on the outside, arm around your shoulder, but the plan is to destroy you slowly. And Ibrahim alayhi salam can see that. he can see فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُونِ. You see, looking at it from his point of view, as a young man, if he gives up this religion and he goes back to the old ways, they'll be happy for him. Everything will go back to normal. Dad will give him a hug. Things will be perfectly fine. Life will carry on. And there's no hostility left. All the pain points in his life will disappear. Right? But that's what you call a slow burn. You're allowing yourself to go back to sleep, not realizing you're all, falling off a cliff. They're falling off a cliff. They want to make sure you fall off from it also. Right? So that's one meaning of فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌّ لِي. But the other meaning of فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌّ لِي is also in the worldly sense. That's in the akhirah sense what I explained. But in the worldly sense also, they are an enemy to me. Because Allah Azza wa Jalla has described, for instance, إِنَّ الشِّرْكَ لَظُلْمٌ عَظِيمٌ. That shirk is the ultimate ظُلْم. It's the ultimate wrongdoing. And if you deeply study not just shirk, but the psychology and the implications of shirk. What happens when somebody does shirk? What happens when people set partners besides Allah? What happens when people set up subcategories of gods besides Allah? What has happened in societies that did that? You will see that directly related to that religion are all kinds of evils. All kinds of evils in this life spur from that. So morality goes out the window, for instance. Because those other gods, those secondary, tertiary gods, they're like different departments that take care of different needs in your life. So you have a god for wealth, you have a god for health, you have a god for destruction of your enemy, you have a god for fertility, you have these different gods, right? And each of those gods, now what's your relationship with the higher beings? Your relationship with them is, well, I need something fixed in my life, I need a child, or I need money, or I need my enemy destroyed, or I need to get better, then I need to go to the right department. I got to figure out what they want from me, because they don't give me for free. So I better, slaughter a goat and put some blood in front of them, or whatever sacrifice I got to make, right? It's an exchange. But now those gods, all they want from you are some sacrifices and some money, right? Some donations to the temple, whatever they want. They want that, and then they'll give you supposedly what you've been wishing for. So it's kind of a business transaction. And then beyond that, if you do any other wrong, that's okay. There's no moral code left. Then religion is just a way of you fulfilling your wishes. That's all it is. But you're not answerable for any wrong that you do. In fact, even if you do wrong, you can come back to the god that is in charge of destruction and say, hey, you can go to that god and say, I killed somebody, but his family's coming after me. Here's some extra donation. Get them all killed. Or I'm about to kill them. Make sure you help me. The morality is gone. It's just the divine Amazon. It's just you place different orders for what you want in this life. That's all it is. It's a wish list. Human beings turning their religion or their religions into a form of their own wish list, right? Muslims don't see our deen like that. We don't just see our relationship with Allah. Ya Allah, I want more money. Ya Allah, I want a new job. Ya Allah, I want this. Ya Allah, I want that. And if Allah doesn't give me, Allah didn't help me, get into med school, or Allah didn't help me, get my immigration paperwork or whatever. Forget it. Allah doesn't listen to my prayers. How much more donations, how much do I have to give before my dua gets answered? That's not the mentality of the Muslim. And by the way, some Muslims have this mentality. And when they have this mentality, they're not that far away from the mentality, the psychology of the mushrikeen. They're not that far away from it. Because what Allah gave us is that what He gave us is not a way of fulfilling our wishes. What He gave us was a purpose. You came on this earth temporarily. You're here on a journey. And in that journey, you have to accomplish certain things. You have to make certain efforts. You have to fight certain temptations. You have to live by a code. You have to live a life of gratitude and thought. There's some things that He expects from us, and when you can do that, then Allah will give you the best of this world and the best of the next world, and the best of this world will not be on your terms, because you say, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً. When we make that dua, what does that do for the life, the world view of a Muslim? Allah will give me good that is good for me here and there together. Allah will never give me something good. I'm asking Allah for something that's good. Not just that it's good for me here and it ruins my afterlife. So then maybe something that I really liked would have been good for me here, but would have been bad for me in the next life. Or it would have been good for me here
for a year, and then it would have brought me 20 years of misery. I don't know that. I don't control the future. So when we ask Allah, رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ اللَّهِ, we're not turning to Allah the same way that the mushrikun turn to their gods. Because the way they turn to their gods actually fuels greed, fuels selfishness, fuels self-centeredness, and fuels corruption in a society. And he can see that. Ibrahim alayhi salam can see that. So all of them, these gods and this mechanism you've created are an enemy for me. Except for the Rabb, except Rabbul Alameen, meaning not Rabbul Alameen. I reject all the false gods, and the only one who is not my an enemy to me, in the end, I have no one left. Everyone else, you, your ancestors, the gods you worship, all of them have become, they've declared their animosity. They want the worst for me. The only one who doesn't want the worst for me and wants good for me is Rabbul Alameen, the master of all nations and all people. So it's he had to lose everyone and everything. In this declaration, he disassociates himself from everyone and everything, and then he finds his bond with Allah, his connection to Allah, his true loyalty with Allah. And you know what? We don't have to go through the Ibrahimi experience. We don't have to go through the in the full 100% sense, but you know what? There are plenty of people around the world. There are plenty of lives, plenty of souls that have experienced something like this. They've turned towards Allah, and when they turn towards Allah, people want them to go back to the old ways. Hey, come on, let's just go to the bar. Come on, just come to the party. Why aren't we went last week. Why can't you go this week? It's not a big deal. Like, pulling them back into the wrong. And until this person realizes, I don't hate you, but the thing you're calling me to, these gods that you worship, and those gods, I told you, back in the day, the gods used to be idols and temples and all that, and some societies still have that. But now your god could be desires. Your God could be, you know, keeping up appearances. Your God could be your image. Your God could be any of those things. Your God could be just making sure people have a good opinion of you. Their opinion becomes a God for you that you worship. Everything you do is surrender to that. What are people going to think? What are people going to think? Before every action, the only thought is what are people going to think? Then Allah is no longer the ultimate authority in your heart. It's people and their opinions. That's what it is. You know, somebody's impulses, somebody's urges can become their God. Have you seen somebody who takes their desires and turns them into their God? You know, and Allah says, and Allah allows that person to be misguided even though they know better, even though, despite their knowledge, despite having knowledge. So here, when he says he's lost all of it, I'm telling you there are people around the world who taste the sweetness of Iman after having let go of so much. Like, you know, I'll give you one last thing to think about as we conclude this declaration of Ibrahim alayhi salam. You know, like, there are trees, there are trees that weeds grow around them, or vines, they wrap around those trees, right? And there are also different kinds of insects that bore a hole into the barks of the tree and they make their homes in them. Right? So the tree in itself is pure wood, and there are things wrapped around it that are rotting away, eating away at it. Right? The same way you can have metal. And metal can be buried, covered in dirt, rust, right? It can be covered in impurities. And in order to get to the refined, pure metal, there's a really aggressive cleansing that has to happen. Right? The same way a tree, a really aggressive scraping of all that stuff. A painful scraping of all that stuff has to happen before you get to the pure essence of it. Sometimes when you come towards Allah, Allah wants you to become purified. And maybe the environment or the people or the situations that you're used to all the time, they're like that rust that is stuck on you. Right? And then Allah will painfully remove all that. It's a painful process because you're used to having them, you know, them with you. Anything that you expose yourself to long term, you have withdrawals letting go of it, right? If you're used to eating sugary food every single day, and the doctor says you can't eat sugary food anymore, in a few hours, you're gonna feel like your soul is being pulled out of your body. You're gonna look at, you know, a piece of chocolate, and you're gonna think this is Jannat al-Na'im. This is, you know, because it's so painful to be deprived of something you're used to. But Allah Azza wa Jalla does that sometimes. He puts us through a cleansing process. That's one of the meanings of wa yuzakkihim. And he'll purify people. He'll purify their surroundings too. He'll purify them from environments that are polluting them and corrupting them. And Ibrahim alayhi salam understands this. He understands he loves his dad. Everybody has an affinity and a loyalty to the society in which they're born and raised. All the people they've known their entire life. The friends they have, the relatives they have. But he has to let go of so much of that because he's holding on to Allah. And he realizes that painful separation is actually a cleansing. And when you're isolated from everyone else, you feel lonely from everywhere else, the only company you will truly find is the company of Allah. That's where you'll find your sweetness. You know? This is illa rabbal alameen. This is truly illa rabbal alameen. There are people that, I tell you, they've experienced this. When they change, when they turn towards Allah, their friends said, "We don't like you anymore, man. You're too serious. What happened to you? You used to be cool." Their family says, "Why aren't you, you're a traitor to the family. You know, why are you doing that? Why are you so extreme? Why are you this? Why are you that?" Constant object of criticism. The same family that used to bring you joy is now constantly giving you criticism, sarcasm, commentary. You know, and the joy of family has been replaced with pain. You feel so isolated and alone. And in that moment, then you find these words of Ibrahim alayhi salam ring in your ears and in your heart, and which is فَإِنَّهُمْ عَدُوٌ لِي إِلَّا رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. They're all an enemy to me except Rabbul Alameen. They've become an enemy because I'm not their enemy. They're becoming mine. You see, that's again, you don't become their enemy. But you recognize that they're, even without knowing, they're wanting your destruction. They're wanting your destruction. And so now from here, he's going to talk about who this Rabb is to him. If he's letting everybody else go and holding on to his Rabb, then what kind of relationship is he going to have with his Rabb? إلا رب العالمين الذي خلقني فهو يهديني والذي هو يطعمني ويسقيني وإذا مرضت فهو يشفيني والذي يميتني ثم يحييني والذي أطمع أن يغفر لي خطيئتي يوم الدين ربي هب لي حكما وألحقني بالصالحين واجعل لي لسان صدق في الآخرين واجعلني من ورثة جنة النعيم واغفر لي أبي إنه كان من الضالين ولا تخزني يوم يبعثون يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم. This entire passage all the way up to ayah number 89. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, inshallah. Now that he's held on to his Rabb, what does that Rabb mean to him? What does he want from? What does his Rabb want from him? What does he hope with his Rabb? What connection does he develop with his Rabb? We're going to contemplate those words, inshallah ta'ala, and through that, develop our own bond with our Rabb. Barakallahu li wa lakum fi al-Qur'an al-Hakim, wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikri.